So Katrina, you said that for the scenario pilot, you recommend overflight of the field, get a picture, come back for a standard 45. But for you, as a more experienced pilot, you would try option one with the potential for bailing out for option two. How does a pilot know which bucket they fall into? I mean, you can clearly be a straight in, or you can clearly be, you know, super conservative, but what if you're unsure? What would you tell somebody?
I think a lot of this really has to do with your own comfort level. If you find that as you approach an airport, a non-towered airport, you can't place where people are when you hear them calling on frequency, like you can't see it, look out, find that aircraft, or you find personally that you get a little distracted. Maybe your procedures aren't quite to the level where you're still very focused on, I still need to put in my flaps or whatever. You're really thinking about that and you know that you're missing calls. Then you need to give yourself as much time as you possibly can to see what traffic is out there. And that's why I chose this for this pilot. I think that mental picture really comes with a lot of experience. And this pilot has mostly flown at a towered airport. They don't have a lot of time at an untowered airport. And I think everybody kind of knows when their stress level gets to a certain point, or somebody sort of surprises them in the sense of like, whoa, where did that person show up on downwind? I didn't hear them call before. And your instructor said, yeah, they called 4 miles out. You know, when you're still hearing a surprise at that airport, then you're clearly not building that mental picture. And I wouldn't choose that option for that person. The option one of the straight in, I should say.
Paul, I know you're plowing straight in, right into the traffic that's there. That's going to be the best way to slot in. Why?
Well, not exactly. You didn't give me the option I want, which is an upwind entry. So I would fly the straight in. And if it looks good, I go ahead and go for it. But my main go-to would be, hey, I'm flying an upwind here, and then I'm going to do the crosswind midfield or wherever is necessary to slot into what traffic is out there. But before we discuss that, I would say this scenario is the good thing and the bad thing about ADS-B. It's the ADS-B freakout. You see all these targets out there and you assume, oh my God, that's a lot of traffic. This ain't that busy. I mean, my airport, this is a typical day at my airport. I'm used to it. I have much more experience flying in uncontrolled airports. I prefer them, and I've just done a lot of it. And long before ADS-B, ADS-B is nice. Yeah, it gives you a good heads up. And I get all these emails when ADS-B first came out. Boy, there's a lot of traffic that you don't see out there. There's a lot of traffic you don't see out there that's no factor. So you need to concentrate on what is a factor, and it's really not that much. And in this scenario, ultimately, you have to use your eyeballs anyway. You have to see what's out there and adjust your spacing accordingly. So I think that's easily doable in this scenario with the traffic we see and maybe some we don't see, and then coordinate it on the CTAF and go for it.
You know, I like that, Paul, that you point out that there's the traffic we see and then there's traffic we don't see, especially at something like a fly-in or a small airport like this where we could have non-ADS-B aircraft, non-radio aircraft, and at Orcas even like ultralights and things coming into here. So there could be a lot more going on than we see. Dean.
Yeah, I've experienced the ADS-B freakout, and it's not a very good feeling. But Paul, I wanted to ask you, how much of the traffic that you do not see actually turns out to be a factor?
Traffic that you do not see on ADS-B, or just traffic, period?
No, the traffic that you see on your ADS-B, but you can't see with your eyes, how much of that ends up being a factor? Because you said there's so much that's out there that is not a factor.
5%, maybe 10, in this type of scenario. Yeah, that may be true everywhere. I mean, you look at an ADS-B display and your eye focuses on all these targets. And maybe someday they'll come out with an AI algorithm that eliminates the ones that can't possibly be a factor. And that would cut the clutter down, and you'd have less agita going on, because it really is a case of just too much information. It's a case of overload. You're looking at stuff that you don't even need to be looking at.
Kevin.
I got to say, working as a controller, and I've been doing this long enough that I worked for a long time when most pilots did not have any traffic awareness in the airplane. And now many or most do. And it happens a whole lot when I'm at work working in approach control. And pilots will ask questions about, well, what about this traffic? And most of the time, the response for me is along the lines of, that's not traffic. And maybe you're scooting along in your Mooney or Cirrus and you feel like you're going pretty fast. And I use this as an example because this happened not long ago. They say, hey, is there an airplane just a couple miles in front of us? Yep, there sure is. You need us to slow down? No, I definitely don't. You're not going to catch that Learjet. Oh, okay. It's like, it's not traffic. So there's a lot of stuff out there, but I totally agree with what Paul said. Most of the stuff that you're looking at on your display just isn't a factor. And it probably takes a bit of training and experience to be able to recognize what is worth stressing about that you see on your display versus what you can just completely disregard.
You know, Wally, I know you're definitely not a straight in for this airport. Why not? And how would you feel about other people doing it coming into such a busy airport like this during a fly-in?
I'm not against straight-in approaches. They're certainly an approved way to do it. But in this circumstance, given all the traffic that's out there, it's unlikely that straight-in is going to work. So now here comes Paul in his yellow J3, and I see this yellow J3 putting along on final. And I'm somewhere on downwind, I don't know if I can get ahead of him. I don't know if I have to extend out to the mountain to get around him. It leaves a bunch of questions. If I'm following him on downwind, then I know how to sequence myself and do that. In 2018, the FAA published an advisory circular regarding guidance for non-towered airports. And they call choice two, Katrina's and my choice in this scenario, the preferred entry. And they call all the others the alternates. So I think this is a place where we should use a preferred pattern.
By the way, Wally, Dave and I are a flight of two.
Well, let's hear from the other half of that flight of two. Dave.
Stick with me on this one because I'll get there. But I keep having these images of Gordon Gekko in my mind from the Wall Street movie, the movie Wall Street. And he was the villain in the Wall Street movie. And he has this monologue where he talks about greed is good, and he goes on to spell out all the reasons. In this case, a straight-in approach is good. It's visible, you're predictable, and most important, it minimizes the exposure for everyone. You know, we're not cutting anybody off, and there's room to do a straight-in approach. You're in the airport traffic area for maybe a couple of minutes. But in the other scenarios, you're making multiple radio calls and you're making multiple turns and you're in the traffic area for many minutes. And so this reason, you know, don't rule something out just because it's more convenient for you. You know, I know we have this sort of, we want to be virtuous and we want to do the right thing and, you know, open the door and let the other person go first. And, you know, I certainly get that. I like to be courteous too. But when you look at the overall picture of this, the best way to be courteous is to minimize the amount of traffic time that you're in the area and minimize the amount of radio calls to, you know, to just keep it clutter free. If there's room, do it. If not, as Katrina pointed out, there's a really good option of option two of overflying, going north, and re-entering on the 45.
Dean, then Wally.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you, Katrina, one of the things that got my attention in this, in your answer, was when you said that option four, flying west and crossing midfield to join the right downwind, that one makes the controller hairs on the back of your neck stand up. And I wanted to hear a little more about that because years ago, I was taught that the crosswind entry was an acceptable entry. And many times I have preferred it because of the circumstances and the the layout of the airport and where I'm coming from and all that. And in this particular scenario, if I fly west of the airport and then cross over midfield, as I'm flying west, if everyone else is doing all these other options, maybe I would be in a position over there where there are a few airplanes. And then one last thing, when you mentioned that when you are coming in on the 45, that that's more of a gradual, you don't have that 90 degree sharp angle. But then if you need to, you could do a, you could turn left if you're coming in on the 45 from the east, and then you have to break that off and turn, make a left turn around. Aren't you going to be doing that over in an area where there will be a lot of airplanes? So I wanted to hear a little bit more about why that makes the hair on your neck stand up, and what your thoughts are on that particular entry.
I think that really comes from just so much time of working a final approach. It is, I think, actually written down now. You do not do opposite direction bases at the same altitude, for example, because that head-on converging, you don't need to see that more than once on a radar screen, and it just makes you incredibly nervous. And there's a bunch of reasons why somebody may not turn in time. So I have a really strong antipathy to 90 degree, certainly head on, same altitude. And I think most of it just comes from how long does it take to fix that? And how quickly are the two airplanes converging? So I like a 45 degree convergence, because if you both happen to see each other at the same moment and you go, whoa, like I can't be here, both of you could turn away from each other at the same time. And it's a really small turn and you're no longer in conflict. Whereas that 90 degree, especially here with terrain in the way, I can turn right and go through the downwind, but how far can I turn? And I turn left into somebody else that might be on the downwind. And now I've just created a faster convergence. There's kind of a ATC concept in radar where we talk about either delaying the cross or accelerating the cross to meet a separation requirement, obviously at different altitudes, right? And delaying the cross is essentially doing that 45 degree entry where you push it down a little bit further where the two of you are going to converge. And, you know, accelerating might be a scenario where you turn behind, but all of that stuff you never want to do at the same altitude. And maybe it doesn't apply in this scenario, but I personally am it's that feeling in the pit of my stomach. You just don't want to see the same altitude thing happening, especially at a really sharp angle.
Wally?
I just wanted to amplify a little bit of what Dave made a good comment about being concise with your reports. And the advisory circular also provides the recommended radio calls that one makes when dealing with a non-towered airport. And they're very few. And if you stick with just those, unfortunately, lots of people like to not only tell where they are, but what they're going to do. And they might even say, we're coming for lunch and I'm going to fly over the field and circle about over here and carry on. And so if you stick with the calls, it's 10 miles out and the next call is entering downwind. There's no calls between 10 miles out and entering downwind unless you have a conflict with another airplane. So if people would simply make the required calls, then the frequency would be available for the people who need to resolve conflicts. And it would also help all of us get a situational picture of the airport.
You know, I'm glad you brought up the advisory circular, Wally, because I wanted to go back to something Paul said early on and get a poll around the table. Paul, and I'm sure Paul will chime in and correct me if I'm wrong, his preferred entry to this would be to fly an upwind, like right over the airport. And then, Paul, you mentioned turning crosswind at the best moment to slot into the downwind. So that's a crosswind that could be midfield. It could be on the approach end. It could be on the departure end. It could be, north of the airport in this case, where the traditional crosswind would be. I don't believe that appears in any official document anywhere as an approved method that way, to have a crosswind wherever. Is that a legit method to enter the airport after the traffic pattern?
I think it's in the aim. I think there's language in the aim that describes it, that an upwind entry is acceptable. So if you're entering upwind, at some point you got to turn left or right to get into the downwind. I mean, you could also, if traffic allowed, you could convert that into an overhead. Nothing wrong with that if it fits and it works.
So maybe I'll put this out to the controllers, how it makes the hair on their neck stand up or not. Somebody making up where they're going to make a crosswind, because there's certainly an upwind entry, but that's a traditional crosswind, which would be beyond the airport. Is it fine to just make the upwind entry and turn crosswind anywhere that slots in well, or will that freak people out with a non-standard maneuver when we've got a bunch of airplanes flying around? They're not expecting that.
I think it's like a lot of other things. It's not a problem until it's a problem. If you're going to do the upwind maneuver, then I agree that if you're going to do the upwind entry, then having some flexibility with where you're going to turn crosswind to slot in, like that seems like the obvious way that you would do that. So I totally agree with Paul about that. Having said that, if there's a volume of airplanes, me personally, I don't want to enter on the upwind. And I'm certainly not a fan of an overhead maneuver at a non-towered airport. I think that can open yourself up to conflict and other people in the pattern not expecting what you're doing. There's probably a good number of pilots that aren't even familiar with an overhead maneuver. So I don't like that. Kind of to pile on what Katrina said earlier, approach controllers are not allowed to run opposite bases at the same altitude. That was a rule change a couple of years ago. This does not apply to tower controllers that are running a tower traffic pattern. This is approach controllers running a radar final. And for the same reasons that she said, I completely agree with her that at a busy airport, I don't want to enter the pattern on a crosswind. I would much rather somehow get to the downwind with a good flick of what the traffic pattern looks like. But were I going to do an upwind entry, then I agree with Paul about having some flexibility with where you turn crosswind.
Paul, for the potential rebuttal.
It's not so much a rebuttal as it is kind of a false choice here, a false comparison. You're an uncontrolled, non-towered airport, whatever you want to call it. It's a whole different set of considerations than at a towered airport, because it's kind of a mutual assist going on here. At a towered airport, you got a referee. You've got sequencing and you got runway separation. Uncontrolled airport, it's a little bit of the Wild West and it's a little bit more flexibility. And I think in the scenario, the word that was used was anarchy. Yeah, it is anarchy, but that's what you have to deal with. So different things work in different ways. For example, at my airport, I am often, I do crosswind landings. I always take the crosswind runway. And people get a little nervous about that sometimes until I kind of negotiate with them on the CTAP that, you know, we can work out the spacing here. It's not like rocket science. And we work out the spacing. And a couple of weeks I was out there and there were two airplanes on the upwind and I was on the crosswind. Well, all of a sudden they came over to the crosswind runway. Hey, if you can do crosswind lanes, so can we. So, I mean, you can make these things work. It's just a different set of rules and a different set of risks at non-towered airports.
How much of this is a comfort thing? You know, being comfortable with the towered environment more than a non-towered environment, and maybe even being comfortable closer to other aircraft. Both Paul and Dave, who were up for the generally one kind of version of the straight in, you both have experience formation flying around other aircraft, whether it's for photos or formation flying for performance or whatever it is. You know, compared to what Kevin was talking about, if I see an aircraft on ADS-B that's miles ahead of me, am I going to hit him? Like, no. You know, you're unlikely to hit an airplane that's, you know, 10 wing lengths from you unless you aim for it or you're both converging on one point. So how much do people think that plays into this? And is there anything people can do to kind of increase their comfort level with one or the other kind of environment?
You know, from my standpoint, it's just about efficiency. And it's just about efficiency for the whole system. One of the instructors I used to fly with when I was learning was an ex-Navy pilot. It used to drive him insane when there would be a gap between airplanes. You know, his thing was, don't waste runway. You know, it's like wasting time on a carrier deck, you know, minimum separation. Just it made an impression on me at the time. You know, his point was, let's make this whole system operate better by closing the gaps and then eliminating the waste.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And as I'm playing back in my mind what we've been talking about today, you know, a potential theme here is that, especially with the amount of information we have coming in to the cockpit these days, we're seeing things that we never were even aware about before, and they're distracting our attention from what really matters. And I could even see if a pilot was too worried about the traffic at the airport like this, you know, they're inviting things like a gear up landing and shutting down the whole pattern because they're so focused on other airplanes and they're not running their, you know, pre-landing checklists. So maybe one thing to think about is something you want to do, something that's safe and that you're comfortable with, that you feel is reasonable, and most of all allows you to focus on what you're doing and not over worry about what all those other people are doing, and trust that the system will work it out.